Today, the Fed cuts, but a mid-policy adjustment only. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest posts covering finance and property news. We discuss the Fed, who cut interest rates on Wednesday for the first time since the financial crisis, as had been expected, citing slowing business investment and below target inflation.
We decided today to lower the target for the federal funds rate by a quarter of a percentage point to a range of 2% to 2.25%. The outlook for the U.S. economy remains favorable, and this action is designed to support that outlook. It is intended to ensure against downside risks from weak global growth and trade policy uncertainty, to help offset the effects these factors are currently having on the economy, and to promote a faster return of inflation to our symmetric 2% objective. All of these objectives will support achievement of our overarching goal to sustain the expansion with a strong job market and inflation close to our objective for the benefit of the American people. We also decided to conclude the runoff of our securities portfolio in August rather than in September as previously planned.
In fact, U.S. President Donald Trump had been calling for a rollback, making unprecedented attacks on the central bank and the chair Jerome Powell, which to my mind raises questions about the bank's independence.
The president has repeatedly called for this rate hike and for the Fed to end the runoff of its balance sheet. What do you say to those that say that the Fed gave in to what the president wanted today? And could you also elaborate a little bit further on why the Fed decided to speed up its balance sheet runoff 2 months earlier today?
So I gave my our reasons for doing this. And just to touch on that again, this action is designed to insure against downside risks to the outlook from weak global growth and trade tensions, offset the negative effect that those factors are already having, and promote a faster return to inflation of 2%. That's what we've been talking about all year long, and we've gradually moved our policy in the direction of more accommodation. I think what you see is an economy that has reacted well to that. So that's what we're doing, and that's why we're doing it. We never take into account political considerations. There's no place in our discussions for that. We also don't conduct monetary policy in order to prove our independence. We conduct monetary policy in order to move as close as possible to our statutory goals, and that's what we're always going to do. We're always going to use our tools that way, and then at the end, we'll live with the results. In terms of the balance sheet, that was really just a matter of simplicity and consistency, really nothing more to it than that.
In reaction, following the first cut in a decade, the Dow and the S&P 500 suffered their biggest daily percentage drops in 2 months. But Fed Chair Jerome Powell dampened expectations of further cuts going forward, calling it a mid-term policy adjustment.
So I think you have to look at not just the 25 basis point cut, but look at the committee's actions over the course of the year. As I noted in my opening statement, we started off expecting some rate increases. We moved to a patient setting for a few months, and now we've moved here. And I think what you've seen over the course of the year is, as we've moved to a more accommodative policy, the economy has actually performed just about as expected with that gradually increasing support. And I think I wouldn't take credit for all of that, but I do think that increasing policy support has kept the economy on track and kept the outlook favorable. In terms of the rest of your question, the committee is really thinking of this as a way of adjusting policy to a somewhat more accommodative stance to further the three objectives that I mentioned, to ensure against downside risks, to provide support to the economy, that those factors are pushing down on economic growth, and then to support inflation. So we do think it'll serve all of those goals, but again, we're thinking of it as essentially in the nature of a mid-cycle adjustment to policy.
So the Fed appears to be in no rush to continue with easing unless new data supports the need to move. And in fact, two officials dissented to this cut, which therefore may not be part of an easing cycle. This disappointed the market, as it means asset prices may not get so stretched. And at the close in New York, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 1.23%, while the S&P 500 Index lost 1.09%, and the NASDAQ Composite Index lost 1.19%. And the Volatility Index was up 15.64% to 16.12, and that's a new one-month high. And meantime, the US Treasury Department announced plans to maintain record debt sales as Congress and Trump continue a spending frenzy that's widening the deficit, even as economic growth remains solid. And Moody's made the point that the cut in the Fed fund rate will apply renewed pressure on US bank net interest margins, or NIMs, and profitability that could stimulate further consolidation in the sector. Interest rates are already low by historical comparisons, and the yield curve has flattened, with a material effect on bank profitability. In particular, the NIMs of rated US banks declined in the second quarter, even as the Fed funds rate held steady, and NIMs will weaken further over the remainder of 2019. Persistently depressed interest rates and intensifying digital competition could promote additional risk-taking to raise bank profitability, as well as spur further industry consolidation. However, banks with healthy levels of non-interest income and room to cut expenses should be able to manage these challenges, and most banks' business models will be sustainable unless US interest rates approach zero and remain there for some time. Of course, some will say that is quite likely down the track. The average NIM of large US banks climbed 36 basis points to 3.23% in the first quarter 2019 from 2.87% in the fourth quarter of 2015. And that was when the Fed began to raise rates. As a point of reference, this NIM increase translates to incremental annualized revenue of around $360 million US dollars for a typical large regional bank with $100 billion of interest-earning assets. However, average NIM declined 7 basis points in the second quarter, eroding nearly 20% of the bank's recent margin gains, and the flattened yield curve and the prospect of lower short-term rates threaten to reverse even more of the recent improvement in US banks' NIMs and undermine their overall profitability, given that net interest income accounts for the largest proportion of most US banks' revenue. The decline in banks' NIMs during the second quarter was driven by lower asset yields and still rising deposit costs. That's a challenging combination. Asset yields fell because of declines in both short-term benchmarks such as LIBOR and in long-term rates, which reduced the investment rate on maturing long-dated assets like mortgages and investment securities. Meanwhile, the continued climb in deposit rates reflects intensifying competition, with many banks emphasizing their direct banking channels and continuing to offer certificates of deposit and money market deposit products with comparatively high yields. Deposit betas will also have a heavy influence. Deposit betas measure the change in total deposit costs as a percentage of the change in the Fed funds rate for a given period. Betas have been low for many banks this rate hike cycle because retail deposit costs were slow to start rising from historically depressed levels. But retail deposit costs may also be slow to fall in response to a lower Fed funds rate, unlike wholesale deposits, which reprice more quickly. Banks have only a few options to offset the NIM compression. They can reduce expenses, a strategy that many are already pursuing. Though the need to invest in technology will limit the benefit of further efficiency initiatives. Alternatively, banks can take on additional risk by adding higher yielding assets, though that would seem to expose them to greater credit costs when the cycle turns. And another option is to participate in the long-term industry consolidation and potentially reap more durable diversification and efficiency benefits. So we expect many banks to choose this approach, particularly smaller, less diversified banks. And the number of FDIC-insured institutions has already fallen a sizable 65% since 1990, and persistently low rates and the flattened yield curve will likely stimulate more mergers and acquisitions. So standing back, we can see that the Fed is still of the belief that we've got a fair way to go through the US credit cycle before things turn pear-shaped. Now, many commentators and analysts believe that we are closer to the end of that run, and therefore rates will need to be cut farther and faster than the Fed is signaling at the moment. But it's clear to me that whatever happens with regard to rates, the financial sector in the US is going to remain under significant pressure for some time to come. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.